ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य स्वयं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् इव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये मुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः
Kanthasrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 10, Chapter entitled Maharaj Raghuna meets Jadabharat, Verse 24. Tanme Bhavan Naradeva Bhiman Madena Tuchikrut Sattamasya कृशिष्ट मैत्री दृशम् आर्तबंधो यथातरे सद अवधायनम् अम्हा तन्मे भवान् नरदेवाभिमाना मदेन तुचिकृत्सत्तमस्य कृशिष्टमैत्रीदृशमार्तबन्धो यथातरे सदवधाय अवधाय नमः तन्मे भवान् नरदेवाभिमाना मदेन तुच्छीकृतसत्तमस्य कृशिष्टमैत्रीदृशमार्तबन्धो यथातरे सदवध्यानमम्ह तन्मे भवान् नरदेवाभिमाना भवान् नरदेवाभिमाना मदेन तुच्छीकृतसत्तमस्य कृशिष्टमैत्रीदृशमार्तबन्धो यथातरे सदवध्यानम् अम्ह Vaishnavis. Tan, therefore, may unto me, Bhavan, your good self, Naradeva Bhimana Madena, by madness due to having the body of a king and thus being proud of it, Tuchhi Krita, who has insulted Sattamasya, you who are the best among human beings. Krushishta, kindly show Maitri Drisham, your causeless mercy upon me like a friend. Arthabandho, O friend of all distressed persons. Yatha, so Tare, I can get relief from Sat Avadhyanam, neglecting a great personality like you. Amha, the sin. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: whatever you have spoken appears to me to be contradictory. O best friend of the distressed, I have committed a great offense by insulting you. I was puffed up with false prestige due to possessing the body of a king. For this, I have certainly become an offender. Therefore, I pray that you kindly glance at me with your causeless mercy. If you do so, I can be relieved from sinful activities brought about by insulting you. Purport: Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that by offending a Vaishnava, one finishes all his spiritual activities. Offending a Vaishnava is considered the mad elephant offense. A mad elephant can destroy an entire garden which has been developed with great labor. One may attain the topmost platform of devotional service, but somehow or other, if he offends the Vaishnava, the whole structure collapses. Unconsciously, King Rahugana offended Jad Bharat, but due to his good sense, he asked to be excused. This is the process by which one can be relieved from a Vaishnava prad. Krishna is always very simple and by nature merciful. When one commits an offense at the feet of a Vaishnava, one must immediately apologize to such a personality, so that his spiritual advancement may not be hampered. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Maiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamishya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurat Vishay Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpataru Bhascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha
patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna. I seek blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas so that I can speak something for the glorification of the Lord and the purification of my own heart. So here we are now approaching the climax of the story of Bharat Maharaj, also known now as Jada Bharat. So this story comes halfway through till we reach the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam offers us many different kinds of models. Ultimately, the hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, however, in an Ishopanishad purport says that Parikshit Maharaj is the hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, he's not the only hero, but the Bhagavatam has many heroes. The ultimate hero is Krishna. At the same time, all those who devote themselves to Krishna are also heroes. And among the various heroes that are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, just like when we have a novel, you know, there are different characters. So there is one particular hero. So whenever a novel is written, the sale of that novel depends primarily on whether the readers can identify with the hero. Yeah, the hero is a person like me. And then their emotions get involved with that hero. And then they can link with the narrative as it is described. So the difference between the Puranas and the Itihasas is that the Itihasas focus on one hero. The Itihasas are primarily the narration of one person or one family. Like the Mahabharata is the Itihasa focusing on the Pandavas. The Ramayana is focusing on Lord Ram. So the Itihasas focus primarily on one hero, and along with that there may be many other heroic personalities also who enter into the plot. But the Puranas, as contrasted with the Itihasas, don't focus on one hero. The Srimad Bhagavatam focuses on one principle, and for that principle it demonstrates different heroes. So at the start of the Ramayana, when Valmiki Muni asked Narad Muni, please tell me who is the ideal person, who is the reservoir of all excellent qualities. And then he answers, such a personality is Lord Ram. And then the whole narration of the pastimes of Lord Ram comes along. So the focus there is on one person. And that is wonderful, because that person is also special. At the same time, in the Puranas, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Amal Puran, the focus is not on one person. The focus is on one principle. That principle is Parabhakti, Uttama Bhakti. Savai Pumsa, Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radhokshaje. Ahaitukiya Pratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. So how different personalities exhibit this principle of pure devotional service is displayed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And for this purpose, it offers a complete panorama of all kinds of heroes. So at one spectrum of this, we have a cultured and refined king like Parikshit Maharaj, who has to face the calamity of death. And maybe at the other extreme, we can say we have a personality like Jada Bharat, who to the material vision will appear completely uncultured, unkempt, the kind of person you will not even want to associate with. Can you imagine a person who doesn't clean up after responding to nature? You would consider this person so uncultured. But there is something which is subcultural and there is something which is transcultural. So in the modern Western society also, people just use tissue papers and don't clean up. They don't use water. So that is subcultural. But when Jada Bharat, his father would tell him, you clean up. And he would first clean up and then respond to nature. So, you know, this is not, this would seem subcultural, but it is transcultural. He is beyond mundane culture. He has transcended the mundane principles of dharma, as Lord Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita. Purvabhyasena tenaiva riyate yavashopisa jigyasurapi yogasya shabda brahmati vartate. In the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, verses 37 to 45, Krishna describes the trajectory of a deviated yogi. And there he describes that such a yogi, when he takes birth again in a future life, purvabhyasa, by his past practice, purvabhyasena tenaiva riyate ya avishopisa, helplessly such a person is riyate, attracted. Attracted to Krishna, attracted to transcendental principles. And jigyasur api yogasya. Such a person is jigyasu about what? Ordinary people are jigyasu about dharma, about eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Religious people are jigyasu about dharma, artha, kama. They are very rarely jigyasu about moksha. But such a person is jigyasu about yoga. How can I connect with the absolute truth? And because of that, jigyasur api yogasya, what happens to him? Shabda Brahma Ati Vartate. Shabda Brahma refers to the realm of Vedic sound. The Vedic sound primarily talks about Karma Kanda. And Shabda Brahma Ati Vartate. Such a person goes beyond Shabda Brahma. Why? Because he has understood that the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is not to be found directly in the Vedas. The Vedas primarily talk about Karma Kanda, although that is not their conclusive message. But the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is found not in the Vedic rituals, but it is found in the transformation of the heart by which devotion manifests there. That's why Lord Krishna says, Vedaischa Sarvai Ameva Vedyo. That by all the Vedas I am to be known. So here, Jadbharat is a person who is transcultural. He has gone beyond material culture, even material religious culture, because he has understood the ultimate purpose of that culture. So normally speaking, if we had read the Srimad Bhagavatam without the aid of the purports of Srila Prabhupada and without the overall understanding of Krishna conscious culture and philosophy that we have got by Srila Prabhupada's gift to us, ISKCON, then we would have found, what kind of strange character is this? The whole story of Jadbharat, as I was telling, for a novel to sell, the readers have to be able to link with the character in the novel. So to link with Jadbharat would be extremely difficult. Isn't it? Maybe we could link with Bharat Maharaj before he renounces the world. At a very young age, when he renounces the world, that is what is going to switch off most people. But then somebody becoming attached to a deer and becoming a deer in the next life. And then from a deer's body coming to a human body and then appearing like a completely crazy person. So it would be very difficult to connect, to link emotionally with such a person. And we are not alone in this difficulty. Even Maharaj Raghuna faced the same difficulty. So, actually speaking, the Srimad Bhagavatam offers us a multiple variety of heroes so that we can link at least with someone. And we link with some. So there are so many characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we may not feel equally inspired by all the characters. But some character that we feel inspired by, we can try to memorize the verses glorifying that person, or the verses of prayers offered by that personality glorifying the Supreme Lord. So, it is the characters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are linked with Krishna. They are devotees of Krishna. We ultimately want to become devotees of Krishna, but very rarely is it possible for us to link our emotions with Krishna directly. Very difficult, because we don't have access to Krishna in our heart right now. Although he is present, and he also speaks, Prabhupada says, but we are blind and deaf to his presence. So our emotional connection with Krishna happens primarily through those who are connected with Krishna. Shradharas Bihar Bhagavan ki jai. So now, how do we connect with Krishna then? It is through those personalities who are emotionally connected with Krishna. The whole process of bhakti is actually development of spiritual emotions. The whole process of jnana or yoga is the silencing of emotions. Yogas chitta vritti nirodha. Patanjali Yoga Sutra says that chitta vritti, the movement of consciousness, which is primarily caused by emotions, nirodha, stop it. Stop it. That is their idea. We are being tossed about in the waves of the bhavasagar because of our emotions. We see a sense object, immediately it evokes a wave of emotions in our heart, and then we get carried away by that. So the idea of the paths of transcendence like yoga and jnana is we have to come out of this bhavasagar, and then we have to attain the shore of immortality, which is an unemotional, almost like unsentient existence. So they want to go beyond all emotions. Whereas the devotee understands that there is the material ocean, then there is the shore of immortality. But beyond the shore of immortality is the ocean of devotion. And as devotees, we want the commotion of emotion in the ocean of devotion. What do we want? We want the commotion of emotion in the ocean of devotion. So the ocean of devotion is Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. And in that, what do we want? We want the commotion of emotion. If we read the Chaitanya Charitamrit, the high points of Chaitanya Charitamrit are the intense emotional ecstasies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they are such immense commotions of emotion. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go into three kinds of trances. Of course, Krishna Swaraj Goswami describes that he would be in three kinds of consciousness. Sometimes external, sometimes internal, sometimes half external, half internal. But if we analytically look at the kind of trances Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go into, sometimes he would be there physically with everyone, but he would be seeing something which others cannot see. For example, just walking along, suddenly he sees Krishna in the trees and just charges away. So others are there, so he is there with everyone, but he perceives something differently. He perceives something differently. And so that is one kind of transcendental perception and transcendental emotion. So similarly, that sometimes he would not only perceive something differently, he would also actually withdraw into an entirely different realm. Like say, when he goes into a trance and he enters into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And sometimes when he would go into a trance, that would lead to physical transformation of his body also. So in the first case, physically and circumstantially it seems as it is, but he goes off into a different perception. Second is that he goes into a different perception and is not available at all for perception around. It's not that he's perceiving something in this world, he just perceives something outside the world. So say as it happened when he jumped into the ocean and then the fisherman drew him out, and the fisherman said, this is not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what had happened? Even his body had got transformed. So essentially the point which you are making here is, there is tremendous emotional turbulence in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that is the highlight. So the ocean of commotion, the commotion of emotion in the ocean of devotion, that is the characteristic of bhakti. So now as sadhakas, now we have a lot of commotion of emotions, but but that is not in the ocean of devotion, that is the ocean of the material sense objects and material misery. So there was a commotion of emotion when Ajamil saw whatever he saw, but that dragged him down completely. So basically, so I was explaining this point, we are over here, there is Krishna and his world of devotion where there is ecstatic commotion of emotions. But we are here in this material world where there is a commotion of emotions at a material realm. At a material realm. So how do we move from material emotions to spiritual emotions? So the primary way is by linking our emotions with those who have spiritual emotions. So So that's why the Guru plays such a seminal role in our spiritual life. And interestingly, when Lord Krishna talks about the Guru in 4.34, no, he does not use a singular, he uses a plural. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinaha. So he's not saying jnani, jnaninas. It's a plural. So we don't have one guru. We have many gurus. So the idea that I have my spiritual master and he is the greatest personality in the whole world or in the whole Krishna conscious movement and everybody else is unimportant to me, that is contradicted to the spirit of the Bhagavad Gita itself. Krishna is saying that the guru is in plural. So we have many gurus because we get connected with Krishna through many different devotees by the inspiration that they give us. So therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita talks about three different kinds of gurus. Patpradarshak Guru, Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru. And at one level, all three are non-different. Certainly, the Diksha Guru is important, most important, because he guides us systematically in the process of devotional service. But it is not that just some nominal connection with the Diksha Guru is going to take us back to Godhead. Actually, what is going to take us back to Godhead is redirection of our emotions towards Krishna. And there are different personalities who help us in the redirection of emotions towards Krishna. So now, coming to the this particular pastime, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport to this chapter describes that Jada Bharat exhibited his mercy to all those whom he interacted with. So who are those? He said he had his materialistic family members who, although they were religious, they were in Rajoguna. And they were Rajoguna in the sense that they were simply interested in material sense gratification. So he said, just by giving them his darshan and by giving them his sangha, he gave them his mercy. Even the association of a devotee gives mercy. Similarly, when there were those bandits and dacoits who actually wanted to do a human sacrifice of Jada Bharat, they were in Tamoguna. And Jada Bharat gave mercy even to them. How? Firstly, by giving darshan to them. And secondly, he says, because of his presence, the presence of Kali was invoked over there. And Kali is Kali Devi is a great personality. She is a very powerful goddess. And by her darshan, and by being killed at her hands, even those dacoits were benefited. So they were in Tamoguna, they were also benefited. And similarly, he says, the third set of person that he encountered was Rahugana and his guards. So Rahugana, he was, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, in Sattvaguna. Although in this particular pastime, he manifests his Rajoguna in terms of his pride and anger, but overall he was in Sattvaguna. If you look at his questions, which he has asked, they are quite serious philosophical questions. So, Chakravarti Pad says that he was like a jnani. Although he was a king, he was inclined towards jnana. He had interest in transcendental knowledge. So, Jada Bharat gave mercy even to him. But interestingly, Chakravarti Pad says that although Jada Bharat, like a pure devotee, gives mercy to everyone, he gave mercy to everyone. But still, he says that he spoke philosophical knowledge only to Maharaj Rahugana. He did not speak philosophical knowledge to his family members. He did not speak philosophical knowledge to the dacoits. He spoke it only to Maharaj Rahugana. Why? He says, because Maharaj Rahugana was a Sattvaguna and was interested in jnana. Interested in jnana. So, that means, is Sattvaguna a requirement for bhakti? No. Sattvaguna is not a requirement for bhakti. But Sattvaguna often creates a receptivity by which one can gain transcendental knowledge, by which those who want to give transcendental knowledge are allowed to give transcendental knowledge. So, Srila Prabhupada was asked once by his disciples, do you love all your disciples equally? Srila Prabhupada said, yes. But anyone who comes forward to render service, I reciprocate. So, what was Prabhupada's response? Yes, I love all my disciples. But still, that equality is not neutrality. That equality is equal reciprocity. There's a difference between the two. The equality of a pure devotee or the equality of Krishna is not a stone-like neutrality. It is not that anybody who comes to a pure devotee, the pure devotee is just a neutral expression on the face, or just a smile for everyone. Yes, the pure devotee is kind to everyone, but ultimately how much kindness the pure devotee can share with somebody will depend on the reciprocity or the receptivity of that person. So Krishna is not partial, he is reciprocal. The devotee is also not partial, he is reciprocal. So this is a theme which comes in the 7th canto, 1st chapter. Is the Supreme Lord equal to all? In the last chapter of the 6th canto, 24th chapter, actually, it is Parikshit Maharaj asks this question. The question is asked over there, that how is it that the Lord seems to favor the devotees and not favor the demons? So then, Shukadeva Goswami answers the 7th canto, and the whole chapter Prabhupada titled that the Supreme Lord is equal to all. So what is the nature of Krishna's equality? We see that both these are described in 9.29 in the Bhagavad Gita. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshusti napriya ye bhajanti tvam bhaktya maite deshu chapyaham. He says, I am equal to all living beings. I envy no one, nor am I favorable to anyone. But still, those who worship me, ye bhajanti tvam bhaktya, actually Krishna says, doesn't say yes, I love them. Maite, I am in them. Directly saying, I am in them and they are in me. So the first part of this verse seems to say that Krishna is impartial. Samoham sarvabhuteshu. The second part seems to say that Krishna is partial. I love my devotees. So what is the truth? Is Krishna partial or is Krishna impartial? Actually Krishna is impartially partial. Now what does that mean? Impartially partial. Krishna is surely partial to his devotees. He'll go out of his way to protect his devotees. But he keeps the door of devotion impartially open for everyone. That means, yes, Krishna says, for my devotees I am partial, but anybody can become my devotee. So in that sense, Krishna is impartially partial. What is his impartiality? Impartiality is that, just a few verses after this, in 32 and 33 in the 9th chapter, Krishna will describe how anybody and everybody can become his devotee. Māmi pāta vyāpāśritya yepisyo pāpa yonaya striyo vaishya satha shudras tepiyanti parāṅgatim. So, those who are low-born, they can also become my devotees, Krishna is telling. That means, he is, through this verse conveying, that the doors to devotion are impartially open for everyone. At the same time, there is surely a differentiation between whether a person is a devotee or is not a devotee. And what is the basis of this differentiation? That is Krishna's reciprocity, his reciprocal nature. So, Krishna is not just an impartial principle. Just like gravity is there. Whatever falls, you know, if some ball falls from a mother's hand, the gravity will act and it will crash it. And if the baby falls from the mother's hand, the baby will also fall. So, the law of gravity is impartial in the sense that it is insentient. You know, for a baby to fall down is a disaster. But from the law of gravity there is no difference because there is no emotional involvement over there. So if we expect Krishna to be stone-like neutral, then we are reducing Krishna from a person to a principle. The very fact that Krishna is a person means that he has emotions. And naturally, those who offer their emotions to him, those who offer their love to him, Krishna offers his emotions and love back to them. And therefore, there is reciprocity of Krishna. The reciprocity of Krishna is that ye thamam prapadyante tam sthaiva bhajamyam. As we approach him, so Krishna reciprocates. So Jad Bharat is also reciprocal. And because although initially Rahugana offended Jad Bharat, but as soon as he realized his mistake, he immediately made amends. And in this verse, he is making amends. He is seeking forgiveness. And after seeking forgiveness, he is seeking clarification. So, to err is human, but to persist in error is demoniac. To err is human. So there is the traditional saying, to err is human, to forgive is divine. That's true. To commit mistakes, as natural, all of us will commit mistakes. And if somebody commits mistakes towards us, we should forgive. So Rahuguna here is exhibiting his human fallibility. To err is human. And Jad Bharat is exhibiting his divine quality. To forgive is divine. So we may also commit mistakes. Sometimes we may disrespect devotees. So to err is human. So there are three levels. There's a divine level, there is a human level, and there's a demoniac level. So divine level means we forgive even if somebody commits mistakes towards us. Human level is we commit mistakes. But when we repeatedly keep committing the mistake, to err is human, but to persist in error is demoniac. So when we repeatedly keep committing mistakes, that is demoniac. So Rahuguna committed a mistake and that was an offense. But immediately he made amends. Immediately he begged forgiveness. As soon as he realized how exalted a personality Rahuguna was and how serious were the implications of the mistake that he had committed by offending him. So now, what exactly is this concept of offense? So Srila Prabhupada uses the word over here that unconsciously Rahuguna committed an offense. So actually speaking, if we disrespect, so that means, see, offense can happen in different ways. So one is that we intend to hurt a person and that person gets hurt. Second is, we intend to hurt the person but the person doesn't get hurt. Which rarely happens. Third is, we don't intend to hurt a person and the person gets hurt. So let's look at all these three possibilities and we'll try to understand what exactly comprises an offense. So essentially, offense would mean that other person is getting hurt and some person has a hurting intention. So what are the possibilities there? That I have a hurting intention and the other person gets hurt. I have a hurting intention, the other person doesn't get hurt. And I don't have a hurting intention, but the other person gets hurt. So among these three, which is the most dangerous? When I have a hurting intention. If that person gets hurt, that's even worse. But even if that person doesn't get hurt, if I have the intention to hurt others, that is the crux, that is the essence of the offensive mentality. So, now, let us look at all these three possibilities. First possibility, we'll look at the least harmful, that I don't have an offense to get hurt another person, but that person gets hurt. So the example of this is from the lives of the Goswamis. You know, Rupa Goswami was meditating and he was seeing in his trance Radharani and Radha Krishna performing pastimes. And as Radha Krishna were performing pastimes, at that time Radharani said, "This flower is so beautiful, Krishna. Can you give this flower?" So Radharani reached out. Her hand could not reach out to that flower. So Krishna said, "I'll lift you up." And he lifted her up. And Radharani reached out and she reached to the branch and she picked up the flower. And as she reached the branch, Krishna left her and disappeared. And Radharani was left hanging on the branch. And Rupa Goswami was seeing this in his trance. And he started laughing. "Radharani, Krishna, Krishna." Radharani was hanging in the air. So Krishna has all these sort of mischievous pastimes with his devotees. So then Rupa Goswami saw this and started laughing. And at that time, just in front of his kutir, a lame Vaishnava was walking by. And as he was walking by, suddenly he saw that Rupa Goswami is laughing. And when he saw Rupa Goswami laughing, he thought that Rupa Goswami is laughing at my lameness and the way I am walking. And he didn't say anything. He felt hurt and he went away. And as he went away, as soon as he felt hurt, what happened? Suddenly, that mystical vision that Rupa Goswami was having disappeared. It disappeared completely. And then Rupa Goswami tried to concentrate again and tried to see. Now we know that Narad Muni lost his divine vision and again he tried to concentrate and get the vision. The Lord told him that you are impure in heart and incomplete in service. So you cannot get the vision back right now. So now Rupa Goswami understood, I must have done something wrong. Because of which I have lost the perception of the Lord. Then he tried to find out what could I have done. By that time that Vaishnava had gone away. So he couldn't see. And then he went and asked Sanatan Goswami, what should I do? And then Sanatan Goswami said, probably you must have offended somebody. He says, no, I never offended anyone. He says, unconsciously it may have happened. So he said, call all the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan for a feast. Call all of them for a feast, and if anybody doesn't come, that it is that person who must have been offended. So he did that, and that particular Vaishnava did not come. Then Rupa Goswami immediately understood and he went and fell at his feet. He said, please tell me, have I offended you in any way? And then, when he saw, that Vaishnava saw his humility, then what happened was, he begged forgiveness. He explained the whole thing, and then Rupa Goswami clarified that actually, it was not like that. I was not even aware that you were present. And then, everything was resolved. Now, if we see the contrast over here, you know, Rupa Goswami is an exalted Vaishnava Acharya, and this other Vaishnava, his name is also not known. But still, exalted Vaishnava Acharya committing an offense to an unknown Vaishnava is also noted by our Goswamis. And it is also described that this is how also offense can occur. So in general, as devotees, we would try to avoid hurting anyone. Even if we don't have the intention to hurt, still if somebody gets hurt, if we find out, then we have to try to clarify. Now if we have not committed a mistake, there's no need to apologize. Now when there is a mistake, we have to apologize. When there is no mistake, there is no need to apologize. But clarification is important. So, that is the first case. Now the second case is, we have the intention to commit an offense. We have the intention to hurt someone, but the other person doesn't get hurt. That is actually the glory of that person. That is because that person is so transcendental. So we have the example of Gopal Chapal. Now he... what did he do? He put the paraphernalia of the worship of the Tamoguni worship of the goddess in front of the house of Shivas Thakur. And what happened by that? When the next morning Shivas Thakur came out of his house and he saw that, what was Shivas Thakur's response? He called all his neighbors and he said, come, just see. All of you think I am a great Vaishnava, but just see what I have been doing. And all the other people, they understood, you know, who has done this nonsense? And they cleaned it all up. So, now it's interesting that for a Vaishnava that to be doing the tamasic forms of worship, which are often done by the worshippers of the goddess, that is considered to be a stigma, that is considered to be a disgrace. So, we have to very clearly understand that everything Vedic is not spiritual. Everything Vedic is not transcendental. So for a Vaishnava, now the worship of the goddess is within the Vedic tradition. But to be associated with the worship of the goddess was considered an anathema and a stigma for a Vaishnava. So just because something is Vedic doesn't make it authorized. Srila Prabhupada has not just given us Vedic culture. He has given us the best of Vedic culture. He has given us the Paramadharma. He has given the most transcendental, the loftiest part of Vedic culture. So, anyway, the point here is, what happened to Gopal Chapal? You know, he was floored by a terrible disease. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so angry with him. When he had to go out of the village because he had got that infectious leprosy. And then when he begged Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for forgiveness, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm not going to forgive you. So you'll have to suffer for thousands of lifetimes. He said, you cannot say this, please forgive me. Then it is described that he went and begged forgiveness from Shivas Thakur, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came back later, at the time of Aparadha Bhanjan, he forgave him. The point is, Shivas Thakur did not take any offense over there. Shivas Thakur did not take any offense. Now that is the greatness of Shivas Thakur. But just because a person does not take offense does not mean that the offense is not there. So if the hurting intention is there and the person does not feel hurt, still the consequences can be there. And a third is, there is a hurting intention and the person also feels hurt. So, this can be very detrimental. Because first of all, Krishna is displeased by our very intention to hurt a devotee. And Krishna is further displeased when his devotee is hurt. So, if both are there, it can be extremely dangerous. It can be extremely dangerous. And when this happens, a person can fall from even a very exalted level. Person can be, you know, we don't read these sort of things, but in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are descriptions of even how exalted personalities who had exalted connections, they became deviated. Now if we see most of us probably when read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we just start from the 13th chapter of Adilila, where the Lord's appearance starts. Before that it's all philosophical or it seems historical. So the 11th chapter describes the trees and branches of the various trees, 10th, 11th, 12th chapters. So there it describes the branches of the tree of Advaita Acharya. And it is described that Advaita Acharya's sons fell down. Of course, Achyutananda was a great son, but Advaita Acharya's sons fell down. And interestingly, what was it that caused their fall down? If we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, only gives glimpses of that history. If we study the overall Gaudiya Vaishnava history at that time, actually speaking, what was their offense? They thought that because Advaita Acharya called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came at the response of Advaita Acharya, therefore Advaita Acharya is greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they considered Advaita Acharya to be God, to be the real God. And this was a form of Mayavad, which displeased Advaita Acharya, which displeased Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which displeased all the Vaishnavas over there. And they knew that they were displeasing everyone, but still they persisted with it. And what happened? They fell away. Can you imagine somebody at the time of Chaitanya Lila, a son of person who is born as a son of Mahavishnu, then that person can fall away. So when the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that even a person who is in Vaikuntha can fall away if he commits offense to Vaishnava, that is not just an exaggeration. That's unlikely to happen, but it is not impossible to happen. It can happen. So the point here is that, of course, this is not the most appropriate example, but I am giving this example to illustrate the point that nobody is exempt from the principle of offense. Nobody is exempt from the principle of offense. So, generally speaking, when we commit an offense, even if somebody commits an offense, the devotees don't normally take offense. They don't feel hurt. At least they don't express the hurt. But that doesn't mean that there is no offense over there. You know, generally, even devotees have emotions. When devotees have emotions, and because they have emotions, if somebody insults them, somebody offends them, then naturally the emotions are going to be hurt. They may not express it, but we don't want to hurt anyone. So the worst kind of danger happens for us when we use philosophical justification to criticize others. No, I'll conclude with this last and important point, that sometimes we may feel that I am philosophically right and that person is philosophically wrong. And that's why we may go on a rampage, on a campaign to criticize somebody else. So now, it is possible that the person might be actually philosophically wrong. First of all, now when we come to the intricacies of philosophy, it's not so easy to understand what is right and what is wrong. You know, somebody, you know, to understand that I am not the body, I am the soul, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, Kali is not. These are relatively crystal clear issues. But there are many subtle issues in philosophy which are not very easy to understand. And when we take a position that I am right and this person is wrong, that can be extremely dangerous. Because to understand what is right and what is wrong, apart from the central principles of Krishna consciousness, see how it is in Krishna consciousness, there is a center. The center is, we have to chant 16 rounds, we have to follow the four regular principles, this is central. Then apart from that, Krishna consciousness is a circle, is a progression of expanding concentric circles. What does that mean? That means if you look at the history of our movement, 30-40 years ago, the idea of a devotee was one who stays in a temple. As soon as you go out of the temple, that means you are going out of Krishna consciousness. You are blooping. So fall down was equated with going out of the temple. But now, so that was a very geographically and conceptually restricted understanding of Krishna consciousness. But as our movement has matured, we understand, yes, those who stay in the temple comprise one circle. That is most, hopefully, that is most closely connected with Krishna. But apart from that, those who are staying outside, if they are also practicing the principles, they comprise another circle, a concentric circle, which is also centered around Krishna. Similarly, devotees may engage in different kinds of preaching activities. Some of them may be explicitly Krishna conscious, some of them may not be explicitly Krishna conscious. But these are all progressive circles, progressive expanding circles. And, you know, as we move further and further away, actually speaking, the dividing line, the cutoff line becomes blurred. So, Srila Prabhupada said that in the future we will have a Krishna conscious government. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean our devotees will become government leaders? Well, it might, but, you know, as devotees we find it difficult enough to manage our own movement. What to speak of managing the government? Stupendous! So it's much more likely that people who have diplomatic skills, who have political influence, they become influenced by devotees, they become influenced by devotional principles, and they incorporate those devotional principles within governance according to how they find it practical. So now they will still be within the radius of Krishna conscious, but that will be in the outer periphery. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that devotees will become judges, that or rather judges will wear tilak. What does that mean? That means there will be, if you see the point over here, it's so subtle. If you think judges will wear tilak, that means there will be still judges, there will still be law courts, there will still be lawsuits, there will still be criminals, and there will be professional judges, but they will wear tilak. So now what will be their Krishna conscious connection? That will depend on every individual judge. So actually speaking, if we use philosophical justification, I am right and you are wrong, and criticize others, you know, there are progressive concentric circles, and towards the periphery, the dividing line is blurred. So ultimately, who is following Krishna, who is not following Krishna, that is known only by Krishna and the devotee. So it is very dangerous for a person to think that I know what is the right way to follow Srila Prabhupada and this person doesn't know. Of course, it is true that if we are working with within an institutional framework, there are certain things which an institution should do, certain things which an institution should not do. That is fine. But there were so many devotees who, what to speak of being within the institution of ISKCON, they were not even initiated by Prabhupada. And still Prabhupada had a special relationship with them. George Harrison is one example. Now George Harrison, he did so much preaching by bringing in devotional culture. But he was not officially an ISKCON member. He was not officially a Prabhupada disciple. Similarly, there's another famous tennis player who became a self-help coach, Peter Barwash. So now, if we interact with them personally, we'll find that they have a devotional heart. But publicly or officially, they have no connection with the school. So at official level, we may need certain levels of connection. But overall, it's very dangerous for a person to judge. Now, this is right and this is wrong. And because you are doing wrong, so therefore you need to be condemned. So as devotees, if we are having an institution, we are having a management position, we need to have certain standards. And to have certain standards, we may have to point out, okay, what you are doing is not according to the standard. But while doing such a thing, it is important for us not to make a personal attack on the person. So, now if we say, I don't want to commit an offense, does that mean, say, if there is a brahmachari who is doing something immoral, say, associating improperly with the opposite sex, or doing something like that. Oh, I should not commit offense to a Vaishnava. So I will not speak anything. That would be absurd. What it means is, but in this particular case, how it is, there is an objective standard. And what we do is, we don't tell people you are wrong. We tell, this is a standard, and this is your behavior. So if we want to be within an institution, the standard has to be followed. So somebody may not be able to follow all the principles properly and he can still be a Vaishnava. But then he may not be having a particular administrative designation, he may not be in a particular ashram. So this fear of committing a Vaishnava aparadha doesn't mean that we dilute or abandon all standards. But even while implementing standards, we should not launch a personal attack on anyone. What it should be is that there's an objective standard. This is what is supposed to be followed. And if you're not following it, then you cannot belong to this particular circle. Say somebody is not following brahmachari standards, that person can still be a Vaishnava. And pointing out the non-brahmachari behavior of a person is not an offense. We don't have to go on a campaign and tell everyone that person's immoral activities. And we don't have to speak in a way that unnecessarily hurts that person. But we also have to protect the sanctity of the standard that Prabhupada has given us. We have to also have to protect the institutional standards. So we can tell, okay, see, this is the standard, this is not being done. Therefore, you cannot be a part of the group that is following the standard.
So you can move on and you can continue to serve Krishna in some other way. So even when we have to correct devotees, it shouldn't be a personal attack on that person. It should be just a recognition that these are the standards to be followed. And these standards, those who cannot follow, they can still be devotees, but not within this particular framework. There are many different frameworks for practicing Krishna consciousness. So therefore, we don't become emotionally angry towards a devotee, and we don't intend to hurt a devotee, even if that devotee does something wrong. Vishwanath Chakra Thakur says that if a Vaishnava is committing, if Vaishnava is not having proper moral behavior, he says still the Vaishnava should be respected, but from a distance. From a distance. That means we don't associate with that person too much, and also that we don't have that person portrayed as the ideal Vaishnava with whom others can associate. That is fine. But we don't necessarily disrespect or hurt or insult or offend or publicly blaspheme that person. So, I'll conclude with what I spoke. I started by talking about how, you know, the Puranas and the Bhagavatam offer multiple heroes. So, whoever we can connect with, we can develop our Krishna connection through the connection with that particular character. Then we discussed how Jad Bharat gave mercy to everyone, but depending on how much was their receptivity. We discussed how Krishna is impartially partial. And then we discussed about what is offense and the three situations that I don't intend to offend, but the other person feels offended. I intend to offend, but the other person doesn't feel hurt. I intend to offend, and the other person feels hurt. So these are all progressively or regressively more dangerous. And lastly, we concluded that we shouldn't become paranoid about committing offenses and therefore not point out deviations from standards. But they have to be done with where the standard is very objectively clear and known. And we have to do it in a non-personal, non-malevolent way to protect the sanctity of the standard, not to hurt that person. So thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shula Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanande.